This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV.
Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. This spring, members of six different BC First Nations are going to be practicing seasonal burning techniques to reduce wildfire risk and encourage revegetation. There you go. I can read. Here to explain more is environmental contributor Lawrence Gunther. Lawrence is also the host of the AMI audio show Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther, which you can hear Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Hey, good morning, Lawrence.
Dave?
Lawrence, how'd you hold up through the storm this weekend in the Ottawa area?
That was some storm, and I was a hair's breadth away from being on the Ottawa River. At the last minute, I said, you know what? I think we should just take a little pause. We're sitting in the truck. We got the boat hooked up, and I said, let's just take a little two-hour break. According to my weather app here, There's a storm coming, and sure enough, it hit.
Lawrence, let's talk about another storm that we know impacted so many communities across British Columbia and Alberta last year. Tell me a little bit about the scale of damage that can be caused by these wildfires in BC.
They're just huge, Dave. I mean, we saw, property the size of Prince Edward Island get annihilated in one giant forest fire. We talked about that several years ago. Okanagan with the heat dome and all the fires that triggered last year. And they say British Columbia is going to be more susceptible to these types of heat domes, right? I think there were 600 people died or something like that from just the heat alone last year. But for First Nations people, this is especially problematic because of, it's their land, it's where they live, it's what they eat. There's just so much involved. And they have something to offer here.
So how do some of these traditional practices end up mitigating some of the wildfire risks?
They want to, and they have been for millennia, using low-intensity controlled burns. Now, if you have a meadow and it's full of grass and young plants, it's very attractive to animals. They're ruminants, right, that eat grass, that graze on fresh leaves and young shoots from pine trees and berries and grass and all that. So to maintain that, to keep forest creeping in and taking over that, because forests will do that, right? Trees keep spreading out and adding new trees. They use control burns, low intensity control burns. Nothing that would, set the forest on fire, but keep the meadows as meadows and keep the trees pushed back. They haven't been able to do that in quite a while, and they want us to do that again.
What were some of the things that were stopping those communities from using these practices?
Colonization banned a lot of their traditional practices. More recently, it's red tape. Just getting a permit to have a burn, especially during the summer, during, dry events, it's almost impossible to light a campfire in many of these areas, right? So there's this whole trust factor. There's this whole colonization factor and just getting the people into the, giving them the tools to do it. For a lot of people now, First Nations communities, they 60% of them, Dave, are located in forests, right? In remote areas surrounded by forests. So there's that issue too. This is especially of concern to them when they have forests surrounding them and there's a forest fire coming. That's a big issue because there's a good chance they're going to lose their community. There's also the issue of getting firefighters in to protect their community because a lot of them don't have roads, and evacuation of these communities because it all has to be done by air. So yeah, there's a special issues here for sure for many of, like I said, 60% of First Nations communities in British Columbia.
You don't need to look much further than Lytton, British Columbia, to understand the impact and importance of mitigating wildfire. But what are some of the other benefits of some of these traditional burning techniques?
So I mentioned the big trees, keeping them pushed back. There's also, growing new growth, new shrubs, new berries. Some of these plants, they just grow and grow. And at some point they get too tall. So animals like rabbits and bears and, they just stop being able to reach the branches of these bushes and trees where they can browse on them. And the shade of these branches block the sun. So, you know, if you go into any old growth forest, there's nothing growing on the forest floor. They may be nice for shade, and beavers and woodpeckers might like them. But as far as the rest of the animals go, animals that First Nations people count on, you know, as for their country food and the berries and the, all the other things they forage, that doesn't grow anymore. So, you know, animals move out. So there's the browsing, the food, and the mitigation of the forest fires. Those are the three big things.
Lawrence, what's coming up on the next episode of Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther?
Dave, we're listening to the sound of Northern Lights, my friend. We've got an audio recording.
Oh! Yeah.
And we're going to talk about weather apps, how to use them, you know, some of my favorite weather apps, you know, to avoid getting in the middle of storms.
Right, right.
And yeah, so things like that. Yeah, storms, solar storms, and everything from solar storms to Northern Lights to, you know, staying safe.
Wow, the soundscape of an aurora borealis, as well as the importance of a weather app, as you just experienced it on the weekend, Lawrence. Hey, Lawrence, mm-hmm. Sorry we had to race through you today, but have a great day, and we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Dave. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.